Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, we are now on the second half of our guest mock draft of 2019. How do you feel, man? How's the stamina? Is the stamina all right? Did you do your cardio before we did this? You going to last all the way to the end?
Yeah, I'll make it. I'm just getting more and more excited looking at who's falling to 25 for the old Eagles, baby. Oh, that's why the closer we get to that pick, the more excited I get.
This is true. Okay, so for everybody to, we'll recap a little bit of that excitement. We'll go from the top of the draft down. We'll let you know who's off the board. Kyler Murray went number one overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Nick Bosa went two to the 49ers. Josh Allen went three to the New York Jets. The Raiders got Quinnen Williams at four. The Bucks got Ed Oliver at five, which really screwed basically everybody else who wanted Ed Oliver after that, which was, we're figuring out, so many people. The New York Giants got Dwayne Haskins at six. Jaguars picked up Jonah Williams. Lions got Montez Sweat. Bills got TJ Hockenson. Broncos, Devin White. Bengals, Devin Bush. Packers went Brian Burns. Dolphins went Christian Wilkins. Falcons, Juwan Taylor. Redskins went Byron Murphy, Panthers went Cleveland Farrell, and now we are up to the second pick of the first round for the New York Giants, and that's because of they have this second pick in the first round because of a pretty significant trade that went on. So to give us kind of the details of that and everything else that's going on with the Giants, we have on with us Pat Leonard, who is the Giants beat reporter for New York Daily News Sports. Pat, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
You got it, Trevor and Ben. Thanks for having me.
All right, so I got a, you know, we got a little bit of a recap of kind of what's going on with the Giants, and we'll ask you some roster and things about that just to get your perspective as well. But I got to ask you about the Odell trade, because this is the pick that got him out of New York. I really didn't think I'd see this day coming. I thought that Odell, just kind of being the star that he was in a city like New York for a team like the Giants, I didn't really see him leaving, especially not right now, but I was even skeptical up until the very end when it really, they actually ended up pulling the trigger. So what was the timeline like for Odell? Really, I guess, from the moment that he signed his extension all the way to him getting traded, what was that like? I mean, did you guys know he was getting traded at some point, like way before we did? Or what was kind of the dynamic with Odell and the Giants in their last days?
There were people that ran the gamut. There were some who, many people believed they would never trade him, especially because of the financial ramifications after signing that deal. I was on it from a year prior when they talked to the Rams about it last spring, and that really got the ball rolling. And I know you're saying, let's start at the contract signing. But what's interesting about this dynamic is even when they got it back to the point where they committed long-term to each other, or it seemed that way, trust had been broken back in the spring. Beckham thought at one point last spring, a year ago, that basically his career in New York was over. He had mentally prepared to be traded. The Rams wanted him. The Niners wanted him. Other teams checked in. The Patriots checked in. So there were a lot of teams coming after him. And so that was almost like, you know, getting his mind back from, oh, the Giants want to get rid of me, to, oh, now I'm still a Giant. I'm going to be a Giant for life. Even when they committed to that, it was just never the same from that point on. And anyone who was not aware of that and aware of, for example, in training camp, you know, the tug of war between Pat Shurmur trying to get Odell to go and Odell not wanting to re-injure himself in the preseason the way that he did the year prior, there was all of that behind the scenes. And so, you know, obviously everything snapped very early when the team kept losing and Eli kept playing badly and Beckham snapped. And once he did that ESPN interview, that was essentially it. But that was everything that had boiled over from years and years of frustration. And the Giants, you know, the Giants have tried to play down the amount of what the off-field meant to this. But essentially the timeline from that ESPN interview was, you know, Shurmur was furious. He was basically Beckham's biggest advocate to that point to keep him around and to get him signed. And so once that happened, you know, that relationship was never the same because he questioned the coach as well as the quarterback, as well as playing in New York in general. And so Gettleman talked to some teams at the deadline when they called. And then really at the end of the year too, even though the Giants were trying to play it down, Beckham was basically throwing darts and Shermer back and forth about the injury that he wasn't playing through at the end of the year. The Giants and Shermer felt like he should be playing. Beckham felt like, why would I keep risking myself for a team that's going nowhere and that's making all these poor decisions up at the top, particularly a quarterback. So I always knew that this was a possibility and, in fact, a likelihood. And actually, the most interesting part of this, guys, as we'll never know now, but the Oakland Raiders, I was aware, were a team that was very interested in Beckham. And this all everything changed when Antonio Brown burnt all of his bridges back to Pittsburgh, because then he was available for a lot less than what Odell Beckham Jr. was. Hmm. Now, he is a very dangerous person to have in your locker room now, Antonio Brown. But the Raiders would have been a huge suitor with a lot more to offer than Cleveland. Of course, the Niners got into it too, and the Browns ended up winning it. But certainly this was something that from a year ago I saw building and building and coming and almost happened in 2018. So it didn't surprise me, but to wrap this all and put a bow on it, even though Odell Beckham Jr., even a couple days before the trade, was, you know, I was told, was basically joking around during training whether who his quarterback was going to be next season, Eli, Baker Mayfield, because he had heard all the rumors. Even though he was mentally prepared for something like that, when the trade actually happened, even he was stunned just that it was that a team would trade somebody of his talent, and that, you know, after he signed that deal, he did think he was going to be here through thick and thin. So it was a shock even to people like Odell, who saw it coming.
So, Pat, let me ask you this about the Niners specifically, because there was the report yesterday that came out for ESPN that was basically saying, like, you know, Lynch and the Niners thought they were going to have an opportunity to talk with Gettleman before he locked in the Browns deal, and that never really came to fruition. You said, obviously, you know, the Niners and the Browns were kind of betting on it. They're kind of fighting for each other. So what, like, how exactly, you know, did Gettleman handle the situation having these multiple suitors, or did he really just want to offload Odell, and once he felt like he got a good deal with Cleveland, pretty much that was it? He just wanted to get him out of the building.
Right. He wanted to trade him. That's a key piece. I'm glad you brought that up, because the Giants don't want that to be said or heard, but they wanted to trade him, and that's why they traded him for less than they should have, and that's why Gettleman jumped at the offer. Part of the reason is because he and John Dorsey have a relationship that goes back many, many years. I did view this as two guys helping each other, so to speak, even though he obviously helped Dorsey, I think, much more than he helped Gettleman. Gettleman mishandled it is how he handled it. I mean, even if you're trying to deal with somebody who you trust in Dorsey, you've been talking with John Lynch since last spring, a full calendar year. You know this guy's interested. I do know for a fact that, you know, if they call the Niners back and they give them a chance to match the Browns offer, I do think that John Lynch and the Niners would have beaten the Browns offer in some fashion. However, I also know that the Niners having the number two overall pick got in the way of this getting done with them in the first place.
Yeah, I bet.
So if the Niners had had the 10th overall pick, he would be a 49er.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can tell you that. I mean, the fact that they had the number two and what the Giants, you know, the Giants wanted that, and then what the Niners wanted in return because of the high value of that pick, that's kind of why it never happened to San Fran to begin with. But Gettleman certainly erred in not calling around and shopping the Browns offer. There's no question.
So I want to ask you a little bit, just I guess kind of in response to both those questions, with Gettleman involved, what is the feeling around how he is running the team now? Because, you know, Odell is gone. They got rid of Damon Harrison. Landon Collins is no longer on the team. A lot of these star guys that were big pieces for the New York Giants, I mean, we could even go back to Jason Pierre-Paul not being there anymore and him being in Tampa Bay. What's the thought around Dave Gettleman? Like, what do, I guess, Giants fans or the people who cover the Giants or even the Giants players themselves, like, what's the vibe around him being the leader of the team, knowing that some of these guys that he even gave contracts to are, they're not even on the team anymore. It's like they have signed him and gone a different direction. And I just want to know kind of what's the pulse on the thought of what Gettleman's doing up there in New York.
It ranges from healthy skepticism to all-out mutiny. I mean, I was talking to a Giants fan the other day, who told me that he has legit, I'm not kidding, stopped rooting for them because of the Landon Collins decision.
Wow.
Because he just can't understand. Yeah, and you know, it's just one guy, but
sure,
he just
right.
said he can't understand. Yeah, he just can't understand why Gettleman would not get something at the deadline for a guy who's that good of a player if he knows he's going to move on, that the Giants clearly didn't prepare for that, so they didn't do it, and they end up getting nothing but maybe a third-round compensatory pick in return, that he's one of the best players and leaders on the team, and you're getting rid of him. Even the Beckham trade, you know, frustrates a lot of people, especially that they didn't get what Gettleman said they were going to get in return. But the Landon Collins decision was something that, from my perspective, really bothered Giants fans a ton, as does the Eli Manning continuing to stick with him. There's always going to be the Eli apologists, and there's plenty of them, but more and more people are coming around to the idea that not only sticking with him is unwise, but Gettleman's, you know, their lack of a plan, obviously they have things in mind they want to get done. The idea that they don't have a plan is rooted in the fact that they are kind of rebuilding and kind of trying to win now, but not doing either well enough or committing to one. And I think the fans have come around to the fact that Gettleman can't make a decision there and is keeping this franchise in limbo, but sub 500 limbo, with no real kind of bright light at the end of the tunnel. And it's great that they have a player like Saquon Barkley on the team, but it's really hard. You know, I mean, Las Vegas is showing you right now, they have the Giants at 6 wins for next season. And so if they go 6-10, then you have 3-13, 5-11, 6-10, and still probably no future franchise quarterback having played a snap. So bottom line is, it's hard to have faith in what he's doing.
So you brought up Landon Collins. We've obviously talked a little bit, well, we've talked a lot about the Odell trade, but we haven't really talked about Jabril Peppers, who was the player, obviously an ex-first-round pick that was acquired in that trade. Do the Giants view him as the replacement starter for Landon Collins? Is he going to have the same role that Landon Collins did on that defense? Because Collins, obviously a pretty big piece. Peppers has not necessarily lived up to a first-round billing so far in his young career. What's his role going to be like since he's been acquired in the Odell trade?
Yeah, he's gonna replace Collins in that defense. He and Antoine Bethea as the, for right now, two starting safeties, strong and free. And James Betcher likes to rotate guys and blitz heavy. He'll be down in the box. He'll be guarding in pass coverage. They view him as a similar Swiss Army knife type to what Collins could bring them. But they're selling him as similar to Collins. And virtually anyone who knows Peppers and Landon's game will tell you that calling Peppers Landon Collins light is generous at this point. And that's not to say he can't be a lot better than he's been. And he certainly is a talented athlete who can make plays, but he doesn't, you know, Landon Collins got crushed for his pass defense, and Peppers doesn't even have the ball skills and pass coverage that Landon does. Not to mention that the Giants defense can't tackle worth a lick. And really their only sure tacklers were Collins, and then later in the season, Ogletree. So I think, you know, getting Peppers was a product of the Giants creating a huge need by suddenly just letting Landon Collins walk out the door, and then Gettleman trying not to get absolutely fleeced on that trade with Beckham. So, again, that goes back to what's the plan. This feels like seat-of-your-pants stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. All right, so 17 is now the extra pick. I mean, going into the offseason, you kind of, as a Giants reporter, you knew that you had number 6 and you were looking at some team needs that the Giants had there, but now they've got an extra one. We had John Schmelk on earlier who ended up taking Haskins for them. I think almost just to, I'm not even so sure that the Giants even like Haskins or want Haskins, but I think that pick was more of like, hey, what you were referencing earlier, you can't go like multiple years into unsuccessful seasons without having even a potential franchise quarterback without snaps. So I'm just interested, I think, what you think they might be targeting more in this middle of the draft here with this extra 17 pick, as opposed to maybe the one that they might be making at the top.
Right. Well, if they don't take a QB at 6, I think it obviously the likelihood increases that they go QB at 17. that could be Daniel Jones. It could be Drew Lock. I don't think Lock will be there.
Are they interested in Rosen, by the way? But, gotta ask. Are they interested in Rosen?
For the right price, but I think Washington ends up with Rosen.
Okay.
There was a report that they had offered their second round pick for Rosen, the Giants. I don't know if that's correct. That was just a report. If they did offer that second rounder and they got Rosen for it, I think that would be a good move. But to answer your question succinctly, I think that he is not a Pat Shurmur type player, and I would be surprised if he's on their team.
Okay. All right, that's fair. All right, didn't mean to cut you off. Continue.
Oh, no, no problem. Yeah, no, so I guess, you know, I wrote a story recently where I said, you know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised based on kind of Gettleman always drafting best player available and their emphasis on value for quarterbacks, so they don't want to reach for one. And also the fact that they really are trying to win again now with Eli still, and their defense needs terrible amounts of help on the edge and up front after trading Harrison, as you alluded to. So for me, I wouldn't be shocked if they go defense at both 6 and 17 here. I could see, like, the draft you guys have laid out, this mock, if it plays out this way with Haskins, you know, or a quarterback being drafted by the Giants at 6, I could see the Giants, even though Gettleman has never traded up, moving up a few spots to get a defensive stud rather than just sitting around and waiting. Frankly, the way your guys' draft fell here, I think Devin White would be the pick at 6. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
But as you guys had it laid out here, DK Metcalf is my pick at 17, only because I don't think they're taking DK Metcalf. I don't think he's going to be available at 17. But I'm just looking at the way your guys' board is falling and reading off of it. And when you showed me your board, I'm thinking of players available that could the Giants could take. I'm thinking of Rayshon Gary, except he's not necessarily a scheme fit, but he's a local guy. You know, I know he didn't always show it in college. I know you guys have him ranked lower than a lot of people, too, which I understand. You know, you got some of the injury concerns. You have the inconsistencies on the field. Can he fit into a 3-4, et cetera? But, you know, he's a possibility, a good, well-rounded guy off the field. Cody Ford was another – he's an easy pick here, Cody Ford from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Offensive tackle, the Giants need a right tackle. I'm just looking at the way your board laid out, if DK Metcalf – who knows how high the Giants have him, but if they have him ranked as the 10th or 11th player on the board and he's available at 17, and not to mention that I wouldn't be surprised if they ship Sterling Shepard, say, to New England for a third or a fourth round pick or whatever it is. He's another guy who knows the reality of what his quarterback can do anymore.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe they do take a Metcalf. Yeah. I mean, listen, when Odell said that stuff to ESPN, he was speaking for a lot of players on
the team. I bet.
Including,
yeah.
I mean, the head coach is in Atlanta on Monday Night Football saying, throw the ball to Odell, yelling at Eli. So, anyway, that's a tangent. But the bottom line is, you know, if Gettleman and the Giants know good players. That's one thing Dave Gettleman knows. He can scout and he knows talent. So if they have Metcalf ranked as a top 7 or 8 prospect and he's available at 17, then they would take him.
DK didn't necessarily go where I thought he was going to go in this mock draft, but I love the fit in New York. Yeah. They need a wide receiver one. Do they not, Ben?
They do. I mean, if he's got to live as the first round pick that Odell brought, that's going to be a tough billing to live up to. I do think they also need to get him a different quarterback like we've talked about. But hey, you know, especially if Odell's gone, especially if Shep's leaving, they desperately need that wide receiver one, and DK is wide receiver one.
Listen, Haskins, DK, not a bad haul. It's not a bad haul. It's really not. Even though Pat's right, I could see them definitely going defense both of those ways. New York's just so interesting. They hold so much power in the chaos, the potential chaos of this 2019 NFL draft. So who knows which way it's going to go. Pat, thank you so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate the insight on all the Odell and the Dave Gettleman stuff. That was great, man. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Vikings next. Vikings are one of those teams that are they going to be a team that's going to make a big reach? I think that if the Vikings are kind of poised to be potentially a team that you go, okay, There's a late first, early second round prospect that they want, but I think the Vikings roster is kind of talented enough and their needs are a little bit offset enough for where they might be able to take a big reach. And we might have a real surprise name coming up with our next pick. Do you think so?
I mean, the Vikings are always good to take a first round corner. And so Greedy Williams could just show up out of nowhere.
My real question is,
when are they going to bite the bullet and realize they have to go quarterback?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Here for Kirk Cousins shade always.
Okay, well, all right. Ben's here for the Kirk Cousins shade. We'll have our guest next. We'll see who the Vikings are going to pick. You guys stick around. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. We are right in the middle, basically in the middle. Actually, Ben would correct me saying that we're now past the middle of the 2019 guest mock draft, where we're having somebody who covers one of the 32 NFL teams come on to give us a better idea of what each teams might be thinking, because you could listen to this podcast and a lot of you guys have for the entire year, and we can give you a good grasp on what we think of the draft prospects themselves, but sometimes it's not always as easy to get a pulse on the team. So that's what we're doing here in this guest mock draft. We now have the Minnesota Vikings. This is a team that is 1 year removed from just almost going to the Super Bowl. And to help us kind of understand why they're picking here, we have Arif Hasan from The Athletic here with us. Arif, thanks for joining us for the show, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for inviting me on.
Okay, so Ben, did you want to ask the first question or you want me to? I'm throwing you a curveball here.
You are, but the first question is always the same. It's always, I'll do my best Trevor impersonation with
okay.
it.
Okay, all right.
It's okay.
I like this.
So 2018 for the Vikings, obviously big free agent addition at quarterback. It's Kirk Cousins. He comes in, he replaces Case Keenum. You really have championship aspirations, and it's the new offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo. Things don't work out. There's a little bit of discontinuity. Eventually, he leaves. Vikings aren't really able to make the mark that they wanted to make. And then, of course, they end up losing to the Bears in Week 17, and they're not able to make it into the postseason. What happened for this 2018 for the Vikings? Are they still a team that's competitor worthy and it was just an off year? What should we be expecting from them after the past season?
Well, first of all, very good Trevor impression.
There you go. That was good. That was good.
I would say that, you know, primarily it was either the Vikings couldn't complete the build because Kirk Cousins is a very particular quarterback. And he needs kind of the supporting cast around him in order to like fully compete. And the thing is, if you've got all of that around him, he can operate, at least from an efficiency perspective, like a top five quarterback. Like, you've got questions about, you know, whether or not he can perform in situational football, you know, situations and so on. But, you know, and that'll move him out of the top five in terms of just who you would take as a quarterback. But just in terms of his ability to kind of put up numbers in the middle of the game, you know, he can be a top five quarterback if you've got everything working. And the Vikings didn't have everything working. You know, obviously that offensive line has been kind of a consistent issue for them. It's something that, you know, everyone kind of knows has been a problem with the Vikings for the past several years. We know that for the first four games, the Vikings had pretty significant problems on the defense, which forced them to play a lot of catch up. And while they did fix those problems, I mean, those losses still count at the end of the season. And so they couldn't, you know, catch up and get back into the wild card race and get into the playoffs. So they fixed the schematic issues with the defense. There's still some questions there to be resolved, especially, you know, with the free agency loss there. But primarily, you know, it's Cousins' peculiarities as a quarterback that are a problem, and the performance of the offensive line. That's a problem. And then, of course, you know, schematically, you know, moving on from John DeFilippo and adding Kevin Stefanski, you know, that should kind of improve things, maybe move things towards the kind of quick strike offense that Cousins is familiar with, you know, coming out of Washington. So all of those things together, in theory, should bring them back up to 10 plus wins and move them into the playoffs.
I want to dive a little bit more deeper into that offensive line because, you know, just coming up with the team needs on the Draft Network site and messing with the mock draft algorithm and all that kinds of stuff, even writing mock drafts, interior offensive line and even just offensive line in general is often like a common spot for this team to improve on, especially in the first round. Break down that offensive line and what actually happened in there. There's a couple of young guys in there like Elflein, Brian O'Neill, but like what around – them and kind of what's their outlook going into 2019. They didn't do a lot in free agency, I assume, just because their roster's pretty set. I mean, I don't know where their money to mess with would really have come from, but what is the outlook on their offensive line? What kind of went wrong last year, and have they taken steps to improve that, or is that really something that they're going to have to go into the draft and address?
Well, first of all, they don't have a ton of money to mess with. That was kind of one of the reasons they wanted that aggressive in free agency. But a couple of problems on the offensive line. I think Pat Elflein's return from injury, impacted his level of play. You know, he decreased in his level of performance from his rookie year. If you take a look at his PFF grades, I mean, they've always been bad. But I think that he's kind of a better performer his rookie year than his PFF grades showed. And if you take a look at like kind of the splits of him on the field and off the field, there's a pretty significant impact. So, he was an important player his rookie year, but the second year coming back from injury, he didn't really perform at the level of expectations, much less improve in the way that you'd expect. So that was a big problem. But another problem is that, the Vikings grabbed a tackle in the draft that year, Brian O'Neill, and then they ended up with three tackles and like one guard. Mm-hmm. And then that guard got injured. And so without Nick Easton on the line, they had to play Tom Compton, and then they had to move one of their tackles to guard to resolve the other guard position. And Mike Remmers is just not a guard. I think he's an above average to average right tackle in the right system, but he's really just not a guard. And he played pretty poorly. He's got like really poor punch timing and balance in tight spaces, and that really showed up. Tom Compton played, I think, above his level of expectation for the first couple of games, but then, he gets injured. The backup to the backup, Danny Isadora, goes in, he has problems, then Compton comes back and he doesn't play up to the level that he did at the beginning of the season either. And so the interior offensive line with Pat Elflein, Mike Remmers, and Tom Compton, for the most part, I mean, all of them underperformed where they should, for either reasons you would expect because of injury, or just because of, what you might call kind of roster mismanagement with Mike Remmers. So the interior offensive line played pretty poorly. Riley Reiff at left tackle played about average. I would say he didn't live up to his contract, but he played about average. And then Brian O'Neill was a pleasant surprise, and he played actually fairly well at right tackle.
Yeah, O'Neill's good season was not something that I saw coming, which, I mean, that's great news, obviously, for an offensive line that you pretty nicely detailed, like, need some guys to come through and play strong. I do want to ask a little bit more about where we're talking a lot about what Kirk Cousins needs in a system to be successful, and why, moving from DeFilippo to Stefanski makes sense. So what changes should we anticipate on the offense? I know run pass balance was a big aspect of what the Vikings wanted to tweak with. You alluded to more of a quick pass game, maybe some less complex route styles. What should we expect? And I do want to get your take and your feel on the fact that the Vikings adding Sean Mannion, who obviously was the backup quarterback in Los Angeles under Sean McVay, do they want to integrate some McVay concepts as well on the offense?
I think that they will. I think that, Cousins comes from, his best years were with McVay on the Washington roster.
Right, exactly.
So it's more than just, hey, McVay did really well. Let's find a McVay disciple and
right.
force the offense to work in that direction. There's actually a connection where Cousins has actually done fairly well with McVay style West Coast offenses. And Stefanski has a lot of experience. He's experienced in basically all the terminologies from Earhart Perkins to West Coast to Eric Coryell working under North Turner. So it's not that surprising to see Stefanski move kind of in a West Coast direction. He was initially brought onto the team under Brad Childress, who's a West Coast coach. And so I would expect that, along with, you bring in Gary Kubiak, Rick Dennison, and so on. You're really kind of just moving in a West Coast direction. And so I would expect that to be kind of the style that they pursue. And then on the offensive line, you'll see probably a lot more outside zone as opposed to inside zone and duo blocking, which is what they did a lot of last year. Just because you've got Kubiak and Dennison in there, you're basically just going to run the outside zone. And that's going to define their offensive line priorities. But yeah, I think that the offense itself is going to try and stretch the field horizontally as well as vertically, which I think is something that, they've got the tools for in terms of, the receiver core, but it's something that they didn't like fully explore under John DeFilippo.
I wanted to ask you on more of, I guess, what you're hearing the team might do, or little whispers, or maybe it's just your own intuition of which ways they might be leaning with certain positions, where they might be high on with this class, maybe a couple of names you know that they're looking at, they're taking a hard look at. We'll get your pick in a second, but just kind of overall, you know, we've had some beat reporters come on and tell us, hey, you know, if the board falls like this or if the price isn't right here, they'll for sure trade back. And we've had a couple of people say, oh, well, they might be looking to trade up, be an aggressive team. What are you seeing from the Vikings? What are you kind of hearing about getting from them that might be options here, whether players or moves at this 18th pick?
I think it's pretty unlikely that they trade up. You know, the Vikings, historically, they just don't trade up. But I think that if someone like Ed Oliver falls for whatever reason, you know, they'll be thinking about it. Notably, they had a top five grade on Sharif Floyd back in 2013, and still didn't trade up, and he just happened to fall to them. And so they're very, conservative in the first round. So I don't think they'll trade up. They also don't tend to trade down in the first round unless it's like exactly one spot. And so I wouldn't expect to see them move very much. Given kind of how I think the mock drafts have gone, I think generally speaking, it's probably better to trade down just a couple of spots and grab an interior offensive lineman, or if the defensive line is kind of shaping, like, it kind of depends, right? Because how that interior offensive line and that interior defensive line class falls in this draft is going to define a lot of things. Mm-hmm. They might stay put and grab a defensive lineman to replace Sheldon Richardson, or ideally, they might move back a couple of spots and grab an interior offensive lineman, or they don't really like grabbing guards in the first round, so they might grab a swing guy, like a tackle guard, at 18, or if they can trade down to, like, 22. I don't know if Cody Ford's a fit in an outside zone. You know, he's been mocked to the Vikings a lot, and I totally see it, and he's got the attitude that they like. You know, if it's like Jonah Williams falls, they'll probably just take him. If they like Andre Dillard, they might trade back a couple of spots. You know, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, if, you know, the most polarizing player in this draft might be Caleb McGarry. You know, in terms of the big boards I've gathered, you know, there's some people that have him at the bottom of the first, some people that have him in the fourth, you know, and so depending on how they evaluate him, he's definitely fit in an outside zone as a guard. It really depends on what the interior offensive line or the offensive line board looks like and what the defensive line board looks like, because I think that the way the defensive tackle class is shaping up, you could see, you know, a bunch go right away and they'll try to grab the last one, whether that's, you know, Jerry Tillery or Rashawn Gary, depending on what the character grade on him is, they could grab an offensive lineman that has the ability to move, someone like Andre Dillard.
Mm-hmm. All right, so if the board falls like this, kind of the way that it is in this mock draft, you previewed it a little bit there, which way would you go? If you were the GM, who are you picking here at this spot, number 18, for the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, I'm taking a look at this board, and it looks like a bunch of interior defensive linemen have gone.
Yes.
It's really difficult. You know, if the Vikings evaluate Rashawn Gary as an interior defensive lineman, you know, it's going to be a little bit easier to kind of wait on one. But for the most part, you know, especially ones that kind of fit the Vikings mold, there's not a ton. Whereas I take a look at the interior offensive linemen that fit in kind of a wide zone system, and I'm seeing maybe a lot of guys, a lot more guys. And so maybe guys that'll fall to 50. You know, Chris Lindstrom's been moving up kind of quietly in mock drafts. You know, maybe you want to grab him. Garrett Bradbury's been kind of solidly in the 24th, 23rd, 22nd area. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to grab him because he's a great fit in a wide zone. But I'm really concerned about the interior defensive line, so I'm going to pick Jeffrey Simmons.
Wow!
I love it.
It's a super intriguing pick. I think that I don't know if it shakes things up, but it's one where obviously they're obviously going to have to evaluate, you know, what their medical staff says, you know. But from what I'm seeing, it's very likely that he'll play this season, maybe not week one.
Sure.
But you know, you could probably put him on the pup list and play him, you know, week seven, week eight. The Vikings do have depth at that position. They've got Jalen Holmes, Nafadio Denebo. They've got, you know, some guys that can kind of flip, and switch to the inside if they want. And so they're very good at kind of manufacturing some kind of make work, defensive line, you know, moves. But by the time the playoffs roll around, they're going to want that interior pressure. Zimmer loves interior pressure. The Vikings spent a lot of capital on the defense, and I think they'll continue to do so because that's just kind of where their bread and butter is. So I think he's a great player.
Yeah.
His off field, a lot of people are concerned about that. I think that what he's shown so far, based off of kind of the reports about him, mm-hmm. are really positive. And so he'll probably pass, based on what I know about the Vikings, he'll probably pass their red flags checks. And they had a similar question about Mike Hughes. I could totally see him being an interior defensive lineman that they pick because they've wanted one for a long time. And they tried to get Sheldon Richardson, but the Cleveland Browns offered him quite a bit of money. So, that's an area that they've got some concern. And then at guard, you could get Eric McCoy or Elton Jenkins. You could see if either Chris Lindstrom or Dalton Risner fall. Garrett Bradbury is probably not going to be there at 50 just because, we saw what happened with Billy Price and Frank Ragnow last year, and Bradbury can move, just as well as someone like James Daniels, probably should have gone a little bit higher based on his performance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always a possibility. There's a lot of interior offensive linemen. The Vikings don't like drafting those guys in the first round, and they tried to wait one on one in the second round last year. I could see them doing it again, especially kind of given how good the middle of the interior offensive line draft seems to be.
No, it's a super interesting pick because, if you just look at it in a vacuum, I think Simmons is probably one of the best five players in college football last year, especially for, draft-eligible people.
That's
and
healthy.
So, he was so dominant, I thought this year, and his injury was super devastating. But I've been an advocate of drafting him in the first round. I haven't seen him this high since the injury. But look, man, especially if you're the team like the Vikings, I think the Reef is totally right. They don't need him right away. They really don't. They would just need him for a playoff push, which I think that he could be back and ready for. So I don't know. I like the move, Ben. What do you think?
You ain't got to convince me. The Simmons is, I think, 7 or 8 on my board. So he's not top 5. But incredible player. Dominant player. And if he's healthy, game-changing for the interior of that defense. What he does to provide interior push, the effect that has on Everson Griffin, Daniel Hunter, Stephen Weatherly, that can't be understated. So, potential to be huge. He's got to be healthy. Obviously, you've got to deal with the public fallout of that. But, hey, also, fifth-year option.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a tackle that warrants a lot of money. It makes sense to me.
Yep, I'm with you. I think it's a really good pick. Arif, thanks so much for joining the show, man. We really appreciate it. That was great insight. We thought that we thought the Vikings were going to go on the other side of the trenches with this pick, but I can't say I disagree with picking Simmons here just because I think he's such a great talent. So appreciate you joining the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, Ben, we will be back tomorrow. We will be closing out the top 20 of this guest mock draft. It's going to be a lot of fun. So everybody stick around. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.